errand, what responsibility, where he'd been even when he tied the corners and tucked the thing away against his heart. He drummed his fingers. He toyed with his lapel. The rain beat against the window. The grey shadows in the room changed places as the sun rose slowly higher behind the cloud. Suddenly he got up, went to the door, and opened it a fraction. "Albert?" he called through the chink.
"Yes, sir,"
Albert called back from the outer office.
"Crosby Wells, the man who died."
"Sir?"
"Who found his body? Remind me."
"A company of men, sir," Albert replied.
"You recall the story?" "It was in the papers. I can find it for you if you like." "Just tell me what you remember." "The party stopped in to refresh themselves and found Mr. Wells fresh dead. That's my understanding. Sitting at his kitchen table, the papers had it."
"Give us the name?" But he already knew. He rested his head against the doorframe and felt sick.
"That fellow in contest for the Westland seat," said Albert. "The Canterbury man. You met him last week at the Star. Alistair Lauderback's his name."
Some 10 minutes later, Nielsen appeared in the doorway of the outer office, snapping out his top hat with such a tremendous crack that the clerk leapt out of his chair. He was holding his stick in a rather brutish fashion, gripping it halfway down its shaft, as if he meant to wield it as a cudgel. His face was very pale.
"Shall I direct any callers to the nonpareil?"
Albert called after him, as the commission merchant made for the door.
"No. Leave me be. Tell them to wait. Tell them to come back Monday,"
Nielsen snapped, without turning. He quitted the gatehouse and strode off down the quay, but when he reached his accustomed pie-house on the corner, he did not stop. He drew his coat tighter across his body and turned inland towards Canyere and the goldfields. Midnight dawns in Scorpio, in which the chemist goes in search of opium. We meet Anna Wetherill at last. Pritchard becomes impatient, and 2 shots are fired. Joseph Pritchard, upon quitting Nielsen's offices, had not returned immediately to his laboratory on Collingwood Street. He had made his way instead to the Gridiron, one of the 60 or 70 hotels that lined Revel Street along its most crowded and lively stretch. This establishment, which with its canary trim and false shutters showed a gay frontage even in the rain, was the habitual residence of Miss Anna Wetherill, and although it was not the latter's custom to entertain callers at this hour of the day, it was not Pritchard's custom to conduct his business according to any schedule but his own. He stamped up the steps and hauled open the door without so much as a nod to the diggers on the veranda, who were sitting in a row with their boots upon the rail, alternately whittling, cleaning their nails, and spitting tobacco into the mud. They looked at him with some amusement as he passed darkly into the foyer, remarking, once the door had thudded shut behind him, that there was a man very much determined to get to the bottom of something. Pritchard had not encountered Anna in many weeks. He had heard about her attempted suicide only third-hand, via Dick Mannering, who in turn had relayed the intelligence of Ah Sook, the Chinese man who managed the opium den at Canyere. Anna frequently plied her trade at Canyere Chinatown, and for that reason was known colloquially as Chinaman's Anne, a designation that harmed her popularity in some circles and greatly accented it in others. Pritchard belonged to neither camp. He held little interest in the private lives of other men, so he was neither titillated nor repulsed to learn that the whore was a particular favourite of Ah Sook's, and that her near death, as Mannering reported to Pritchard later, had driven the man almost to hysteria. Mannering did not speak Cantonese, but he knew a handful of written characters including metal, want, and die, enough to conduct a pictographic colloquy with the aid of his pocketbook, an object that was by now so heavily marked and foxed with use that he was able to perform very sophisticated rhetorical allusions simply by leafing back through the pages and pointing with his fingers to an old quarrel, an old settlement, an old sale. It irritated Pritchard that Anna had not contacted him herself. He was a chemist, after all, and south of the Grey River at least, the sole supplier of opium to the West Coast dens. Concerning a matter of overdose, he was an expert. She ought to have called on him, to solicit his advice. Pritchard did not believe that Anna had tried to end her life. He could not believe it. He was sure that she had been forced to take the drug against her will. Either that, or the stuff had been altered with the intention of causing her harm. He had tried to recall the remainder of the lump from the Chinese den in order to examine it for traces of poison, but Ah Suk was much too furious to indulge this request, having articulated, again via Mannering, his vehement resolve never to conduct business with the chemist again. Pritchard was indifferent to the threat. He had plenty of custom in Hokitika, and the sale of opium made up only a very small percentage of his revenue. But his professional curiosity about the event had not yet been satisfied. He needed now to question the girl himself. The hotel's proprietor was not present when Pritchard entered the foyer of the Gridiron Hotel, and the space had an empty, rattling feel. Once Pritchard's eyes became accustomed to the gloom, he saw Clinch's valet, who was leaning against the desk, reading an old copy of The Leader, simultaneously mouthing the words and tracing them with his fingertip as he followed each line of print. There was a greasy patch on the countertop where the motion of his finger had polished the wood to a shine. He looked up and gave the chemist a nod as he passed. Pritchard flicked a shilling at him, which the other caught neatly and slapped onto the back of his hand. "Came up tails," the boy called out, as Pritchard began to ascend the stairs, and Pritchard gave a snort of laughter. He could be brutal when his spirits were aggrieved, and he was feeling brutal now. The hallway was quiet, but he put his ear against Anna Wetherill's door and listened for a moment before he knocked. Harold Nielsen had guessed rightly that Pritchard's relations with Anna Wetherill were rather more tormented than his own, but he was mistaken to conclude that the chemist was in love with her. In fact, Pritchard's taste in women was thoroughly orthodox, even juvenile. He would sooner be inclined to fall for a dairymaid than for a whore, however dull the maid and however striking the whore. He valued purity and simplicity, plain dress, a soft voice, a tractable will, and a small ambition, which is to say, contrast. His ideal woman would perfectly contrast him. She would be knowable where he was unknowable, composed where he was not. She would be a kind of anchor from above and without. She would be a shaft of light, a comfort, a benediction. Anna Wetherill, with all her excess and intoxication, was too like him. He did not hate her for that exactly, but he pitied her. In general, Pritchard was close-mouthed on the subject of the fairer sex. He did not enjoy speaking about women with other men, a practice which, in his estimation, was always clownish and braying. He kept his silence.